over there and talk to Tom Paris?
My baby daddy. I hope they've got the lizard makeup ready.
I'm gonna die.
Bonkers, but it wasn't bonkers in a good way.
Welcome to Displaced in Space, a Star Trek Voyager podcast.
I'm Angelina.
And I'm Sam, and we're recapping the series as we watch each episode for the first time. We don't know what happens to the characters or whether the crew gets home, but we're definitely along for the ride. And today we're talking about the episode titled Threshold, Season 2, Episode 15. It was written by Brannon Braga and Michael DeLuca, and directed by Alexander Singer. It first aired on January 29th, 1996, to 6.2 million homes.
IMDb says this is the one where Tom's attempt to cross the time warp threshold and make a name for himself results in rapid physical mutation. I say this is the one where Captain Catherine Janeway and Tom Paris have lizard sex. And you know what? Janeway seemed to kind of be okay with it.
Okay, real quick, normally when we prepare for these podcast episodes, we watch the episode of Voyager just one time for funsies, then we watch it again to take notes on it, but it was really tempting with this episode not to watch it the second time to take the notes because it honestly didn't feel necessary because you basically just summed up The episode,
in a nutshell.
Yeah, it really, if you haven't seen the episode, this is going to sound crazy, but we swear to God, this is what happens. Tom Paris flies a shuttlecraft, he hits warp 10.
Right.
He comes back to Voyager, he turns into a lizard.
Yeah, he takes Janeway with him.
He then kidnaps Captain Janeway, flies at warp 10 again, turns her into a lizard. They go to a planet, have sex, have lizard babies. Voyager finds them, brings them back home, turns them back into humans.
The podcast is over. We're done.
What did you think of this episode? I thought it was crazy.
I thought it was offensive to humanity.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll get into a little bit more of the specifics. We did end up deciding, we'll take the notes.
We'll be serious.
We'll do it. But, because this needs to be dissected for the sake of humanity and storytelling criticism. And another thing I want to say before we get started on this episode, because we're going to poop on it.
Yeah,
I have
sorry,
a feeling.
Sorry.
I can't imagine anyone ever watched this episode and didn't poop on it. So it's probably been pooped on a lot. And, you know, we try to be positive about Voyager because I still believe that, you know, every episode that it ends up airing is some kind of a serious, success or, you know, some kind of a major undertaking has happened that you get all these people, the behind the scenes people and the actors and everybody got to work together and made this thing. So
right.
It's always an amazing thing to me. But even, in reading Memory Alpha, it turns out that even the writers of this episode know that this was a major oddity. Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah, so we don't feel too bad being kind of hard on this one. It kind of deserves it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we should get started on the details behind what ends up being lizard sex between Captain Janeway and Tom Paris.
Well, you know, I will say it starts out strong. It starts out strong.
It does.
There's a shuttlecraft, we're in a shuttlecraft. So the opening, we're in a shuttlecraft and Paris is trying to achieve trans warp, which is warp 10. So you can't go to warp 10. You can only go up to like
9.9. 9.9, 9.9999, I guess.
But you can never get to warp 10, which is trans warp. And he's trying to do this with the power team.
Torres and Harry Kim.
And it's really, that's what I really like. I like their relationship. Like, I like the Harry Kim, Torres, and Paris, like, little interactions. Like, it's really good. They're all very smart. They're all trying to do this. You know, and that's what I really like about the episode. It is very strong with that. So he's trying to get to Warp 10. They're communicating from outside the shuttle. But before he can reach Transwarp, the shuttle completely breaks down. It breaks up and it's all bad. And we're actually on the holodeck and everything goes away. The whole simulation goes away. And Torres tells him that he'd be dead, which is like a really good start to this episode.
Yeah, like, ooh, okay, you're gonna try to break the warp barrier, essentially. Like, this is, like you say, strong start, inauspicious start to how the episode ends. But I'm gonna say this too about this episode. I feel like this episode was an exercise in no one in the writer's room can say no. So whatever, and it's almost like maybe there's like a kind of like a game of telephone or just round robin. So like, Angelina, how does the episode start?
So it's like
they're going to be on a shuttlecraft. My turn. Okay, then they're going to do this.
Well,
By the end, you get to lizard sex on the with Captain Janeway because
nobody
said no. That's not how the episode was actually written. They actually had
like
decent ideas that just didn't get conveyed on the screen. But that's how you start the episode.
So it starts out strong. Whoever started out strong.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there was a weirdo in there that got a little messy.
Yeah, someone's always got to mess up a game like that. So then they go to the theme music. They come back, and it's Paris and the power team, and they're in the mess hall trying to figure out how they can keep the shuttle from breaking apart when they get to warp 10.
So they got all of the science and the mathematical equations down for warp 10, which is incredible. Like, you know, you think of Harry Kim and how brilliant he is, and you think of Torres and how brilliant she is, and now I think they really are trying to just really restructure Tom Paris because he's able to hold his ground with them.
Right. Oh, that's true.
Which is very different from episode when science was so boring.
Yeah, a couple times in the first season, he's like, I don't understand quantum mechanics.
Then they're like, no, we need to bring him up to speed, and he needs to, these are his friends, these are his peers, and we need to get him there. And he is there, and he's holding his ground, and it all seems very natural, and I really like it.
And it feels like an actual engineering or like maybe a NASA kind of a project.
Yeah.
You have the pilots involved, you have the engineers and the scientists and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah. So they're sitting there, they're all sitting around a pot of coffee trying to figure it out. And the problem is that the nacelle of the shuttle keeps getting ripped off from the shuttle itself.
Yeah.
In their simulation.
So, the shuttle can't contain Warp 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that they can't reach Warp 10. The shuttle itself cannot.
It's just not strong enough to hold the ship together. And then Neelix comes by and he offers him more coffee. And then he says, oh, what are you guys working on? And they try to explain it. And he says, oh, maybe I can help. And they all look at each other like, we don't have time for this. And then Torres is trying to be like nice about it. And she's like, do you have any food? And Neelix, he doesn't take the hint. And he says, I think there's some biscuits in the kitchen. And then Torres just sits there waiting. And then she says, okay, I guess I'll go get them. So she leaves. And Neelix gets Kim and Paris to kind of describe the problem that they're having. Mm-hmm. And at first, they don't want to tell him. And Neelix is like, oh, what, you don't think I can understand? But then it turns out he really can't understand.
No, yeah.
And he's like amazed. Kim explains to him what warp 10 would actually mean, and it would be like you're everywhere
at once in the universe.
Yeah, in the
which
whole
is
universe,
very cool. Like, see, that also is a very cool like faux science, thing that I'm here for. Like, I'm here for that kind of Star Trek. I really loved that idea.
Yeah,
and I love the idea that once you get to warp 10, you literally are everywhere at one time. In the universe. It's a very cool idea.
And so that's where it's like, in the process of writing the episode, that's where they got messed up, was someone took it to, oh, well, if you ended up being everywhere in the universe at once, it would somehow kickstart human evolution.
Right.
Which that's what we find out ends up happening and why people are turning into lizards. But
we'll go into that more.
But that's where it was like you could have done anything. But again, no one said no. So oh well, what about so what's gonna happen when Tom Paris goes to Warp 10? It'll jumpstart human evolution. Oh, that's really cool. I guess it'd be, but like you compared it to the episode of TNG where Barclay,
the alien race, they needed to get the alien race to like a certain part of the universe. So somehow, like, I don't really quite remember,
but they turned him into like flowers super, for Algernon guy. Yeah. And he became like big brain guy.
Right.
And it's like, okay, we could go, well, maybe they're like, we don't want to do that because we've already done that with Barclay.
TNG,
well, what if when humans evolve, they turn into lizards? And again, nobody said no to that.
They should have.
let's roll with that. Yeah. So anyway, but like you say, that's a good way to start.
It's a good, promising premise for the show. Very cool. Again, it took my imagination. It was a very cool Star Trek-y, like, faux science thing, which I appreciate.
And Neelix is funny because as they're explaining to him that they're trying to achieve Warp 10, he's like, You guys are trying that too? That's really interesting.
He's like, wow.
And then he starts to share a story about a time that he was working on a ship and it got caught in it, or he traveled into like a dark nebula and he had his ship kind of ripped apart. And at first, of course, Kim and Paris are dismissive of it, but then it gets the juices flowing.
Yeah.
And like, they finally work out the problem that it's not that the nacelle is breaking off from the shuttle, but that the shuttle is breaking off from the nacelle, which isn't important in the grand scheme of this episode, but that's what they figure out. And then they jump up, they're ready to go back to work on their simulation.
Paris
like hugs Neelix. He's like, Neelix, you're a genius. And Neelix walks away. He's like, I have no idea what they're talking about.
And again, I love this whole scene.
It was genuinely funny. I ended up watching it three times between, you know, all of the viewings that we've done. And each time Neelix made me laugh.
Yeah, it was funny. Perfect. And there's good Neelix. Good use of Neelix. Mm-hmm. Good use of the dynamic between everybody. Mm-hmm. It was very cool.
It was a bit of like, it sort of went beyond how they've even been using him, which has already been fine, where he's just got this folksy wisdom. Uh-huh. But this time he doesn't even really have wisdom. He just kind of trips into being able to help them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
So we're in the conference room, and because they figured out the problem, they actually have footage where, like, in the holodeck, Paris has, like, successfully reached Warp 10. And the next step will just be for a real test. And Janeway's, like, super impressed. Again, the whole point of doing this is that if you can be everywhere in the universe when you come back, you should be able to be in the Alpha Quadrant.
Just get to wherever you want to go instantaneously. So, yes. Like, I think Kim had mentioned earlier, like, you could get home in the push of a button.
Basically. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And not only that, but, like, Chakotay's like, we'll get us home, but even, like, the implications of achieving Warp 10, like, what would this do for, like, time travel and, like, everything? It's, like, huge.
Janeway makes sure to point out that in the last few centuries, we've been really responsible with the technology. Like, I don't think she's counting us in that. I don't think we made the cut. I think she's probably talking about 2100 and beyond, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, she says, you know, it won't be too bad. We'll use it responsibly. We've been really good about that lately.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, and it was, like, this was, like, Paris's baby, which, again, makes you, like, shocked, like, that he's the one that came up with the idea, like, the, like, he knew the science behind it, and, like,
or at least was able to contribute enough. And it wasn't just the power team saying, we came up with transwarp
and now
we
Paris
need
is our
pilot. Yeah, no, you're our pilot, Paris. No, but, like, I'll do it.
Paris was literally the driving force. He's the one that had the idea. He's the one that got the ball rolling. He's the one that asked Janeway for, like, to test it,
yeah,
you know, and to spend time working on this project. And so then, Janeway tells Paris that he could join the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, the Zefram Cochran in the history books. And, you know, Zefram Cochran is the one who, created warp.
For humans, I guess.
So Tom Paris is now going to be in the echelons of, you know, scientific exploration.
And so then we go, Loungewear alert. Oh.
Paris is in a sexy robe. Paris, like, what is he doing in a sexy robe?
I'm keeping a list of how these people chill in their quarters. We know Janeway sleeps in her little nightgown.
Yeah.
We Torres know wears a full body thing. I would consider a respectable pair of pajamas, a set of pajamas. Covers all of her body parts. Tom Paris just chills in a robe.
A blue robe. Like, very similar, I think, to Picard.
Picard, yeah. With the chest hair robe. Showing,
yeah.
Even.
And, like, yeah, and he's, like, lounging in his, like, I don't know, lounge
just shit. Chilling and reading a book in a robe. I don't know what time of day
and then
it is.
Let, like, yeah, like, yeah, so then there's, like
a door. Yeah. Someone rings his doorbell, basically, and he's like, come in.
You're like in the sexy robe?
But like, then Janeway comes in and he's like, oh no, I'm in my robe. He's like, well, you let her in.
Who did you think?
Who was it okay to see you in the robe? Like, Harry Kim probably comes over a lot, and he's cool with Kim seeing him in the robe, I guess. I don't know. Maybe he's got ladies on the ship that we don't know about, but Janeway wasn't one of the ladies that he was thinking of. And then I also think maybe it was foreshadowing their later intimate encounter.
Oh my gosh.
When Janeway's going to see him in even less than a robe.
Yeah.
She's going to see him in lizard his birthday closet. Scales. Yeah. And so, Janeway's got bad news for him, though. The doctor thinks that Kim should actually pilot the shuttle during the test flight, because there's a 2% chance that Paris will suffer a brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
Just based on, you know, running his scans and stuff. And Paris, he's incredulous.
Yeah, he can't take it.
Yeah, he says 2% chance. Like, I will take that chance.
And I don't care.
Janeway says, well, we need you on the ship. Like, we, you know, it's your health. We can't risk it. And Paris says, well, you know, when I was a child, it's always his dad issues.
And here's the thing. I will say this. I do not believe in telling kids that they're special. And I believe in not telling kids that they're special specifically for this reason. Because you set them up to, like, fail miserably. Like, you tell them that they can achieve things and, like, amazing things if they work hard. But you do not tell kids that they are going to achieve something grand and special.
They have a destiny.
Because it messes kids up. Like,
well, I took it the other way, where I was like, I bet you Kim's parents told him he's special too, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. But the difference
everyone tells their kids that they're going to go do something great. And so, or they're at least capable of it. So yeah. I was like, oh, Kim's parents don't care what happens to him. Like,
he doesn't get
to be the pilot. Like, there's a 100% chance that Kim will survive, or at least that he won't have a brain aneurysm.
But you know what? I don't think that Kim's parents, like, what I know from, like, super high-achieving people is their parents don't tell them they're special. Their parents have high expectations for them and, like, demand a ridiculous amount that shows that they expect that their kids are going to do something amazing and special, but they do not tell their kids that they are special.
Oh, and that would be... And Paris really isn't so far amazing and special, and Kim is amazing and special.
Yeah, because Kim has no... Kim has all that work ethic, like...
He's got no, like, social etiquette, though.
No, like, because his parents made him... His parents he was probably doing homework when he should
have been interacting with other people.
And if I know anything, like, Kim's parents were probably way too harsh on him, and he never achieved the expectations that were placed upon him.
That's why when he went back to Earth in that episode, he didn't even ask. Yeah, I didn't even want to go see his parents. He's like, oh, I'm free for a little while. Eventually, I'll have to talk to them. But now his whole legacy, his whole purpose for existing is, like, all wrapped up in this test flight.
Yeah, and not only that, he was told he was special, and then he had, like, the terrible, like, tragedy happen where, like, he caused the accident, and, like, his whole life went south. Because it wasn't just his dad that told him he was special. Yeah, it wasn't, like, his dad told him he was special, but it was, like, his dad was telling him he was special. All the people around him told him he was special. They were like, you're going to do something, probably because he was charismatic.
Or because his dad was, like, a higher up. Yeah. Like, that's a different set of expectations that those types of families can have on you, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, I am this muckety-muck in this realm, whatever that realm is, and so you should be too. You see it with that. I was just listening to a sports radio show where they were talking about the pressures on athletes, like, whose parents were like LeBron James's son You know, and they were talking about, well, LeBron James is a good basketball player. He's not great, and he's certainly not LeBron James.
Correct.
And in one of the Mannings, like the younger Mannings after Peyton and Eli, you know, it's like, well, he's not, if he wasn't named Manning, would we even care? And it's like Paris is the same thing. Like, if his dad wasn't some kind of a higher up in Starfleet, would anyone care about Tom Paris at all?
Right.
He'd just be a schmo. Yeah. Just like most of the guys on the ship trying to just make, you know, live their life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so then he had the shameful thing happen to him. He got exiled from everything. And this is his like redemption arc. And so like with the redemption arc, now he has the chance to like prove that he is special by being part of the Warp 10 group.
It's almost kind of meta in a way. See, I guess this is why we wanted to dissect this episode. But it's almost kind of meta because, like, at least as far as we're concerned, I don't know how the reception of Paris was at the time when the show came out, but, like, as far as we're concerned, Paris is just, like, he cannot be on the show, I feel like. Because the few episodes that have been about him have made him look pretty terrible.
Yeah.
He seems pretty terrible. And so...
But he does have a charm and a warmth to him that, like, makes you like the character.
Right. And it's like they could be doing more with him. And now it's like they're trying to do that. And so if he doesn't do the test run, if Harry Kim gets it again... Harry Kim's had plenty of episodes and we already know he's the golden boy.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's kind of like... Yeah. Paris, the character, needs this,
yeah.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's a terrible episode. I feel so bad for Paris. Like, this is the episode that you get after not getting an episode since, like, you had that affair with a lady? Like, this is it? Like, but at the same time, they are, like, they're bringing back in more of his issues, like, because he has so many issues.
It's all about the daddy issues.
All about the daddy issues. It's all about being, like, his worth, his self-worth, all of that stuff, which is, again, why you don't tell kids that they're special.
Wow. I'll keep that in mind. I will not tell our kid that they're special.
No, you tell them that they can work hard and achieve the things that they want to achieve, but they have to work hard for it.
They have to work hard for it.
Yeah.
Okay. But Janeway's convinced by Paris' his little speech.
Yeah, sure.
And because Paris says, so Janeway says, well, your life could be in danger. And then Paris says, well, this is the first time in years that I felt like I've had a life to risk.
Yeah.
And which again, like, oh my God, like you've had so much expectations put on you, so many pressures that, like, yeah, now you have to risk your life just to say that you ever achieved anything. You know, it's like overcompensating.
Yes.
And that convinces Janeway, and so she's going to let him pilot the flight, and he'll wish he had never said yes to this.
Yeah,
exactly. Or at the very beginning of the episode, Torres told him he was dead. He'll wish he had been dead. I would anyway.
We're on the bridge, and then also in engineering.
Yeah, it's kind of bouncing around between engineering and the bridge because they're getting ready to initiate the test flight.
And the big part of the reason I think why they even have Torres in engineering is because the spy is there. The spy is from last episode.
Oh,
the
right.
So he's listening in on this. So I guess they're really going to kind of go, again, they put like a little bit of that overarching like.
Yeah. And if you didn't hear like our last episode or didn't see the last episode of Voyager, there's a spy there's someone who used to be Maquis.
Yeah.
And he's now sending information. He's trying to get in the good graces of Seska. So he's sending information from Voyager to this Kazon sort of a liaison, or I said he's like the receptionist to Seska, possibly. Yeah. And this Maquis guy just can't get through to Seska. He won't put him on the line, but he'll take his messages and passes them along to Seska. So that person, it plays a role in this episode too. That spy, and I don't know what his name is.
He doesn't have a name, I don't think, or maybe he does. Who knows? Okay, so So Janeway gives Paris the go-ahead to launch, and so in the shuttle, Paris takes off. He gets up to warp 9, and Torres is able to tell him that he's clear for transwarp. He kicks up to warp 10, and success, but as he's talking to Voyager, all of a sudden the signal disappears, and he cannot be located.
Uh-oh.
He has reached transwarp.
He's everywhere, but it's like he's nowhere.
Yeah, he's everywhere, but nowhere at the same time, which is totally, again, completely cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so they go to commercial. On that note, they come back. Kim's performed some sensor sweeps, and they still can't find Paris. And they say, well, he could be anywhere in the universe. And Janeway just very pragmatically says, well, we can only really search our little corner here. Yeah. So we'll do that. But then Tuvok detects a quantum surge off the port bow. And it's Paris's shuttle, which, by the way, his shuttle is named the Cochrane, which is kind of cool. I don't know how many shuttles they have left. That might be the last one they have left, too, the Cochrane. But his life signs are weak, so Janeway has him beamed straight to sickbay, and then she heads off to sickbay to meet him.
So we're in sickbay, and so it's Janeway, Paris, and the doctor. And Paris laying there, and the doctor's like looking at him. He's like, everything seems fine. And he's just asleep, and then Janeway's like, well, can we wake him up? And he's like, yeah, I don't see why not. And so then he screams in his ear.
Yeah.
Wake up. And you're like, oh my God.
It's just the doctor being the doctor, basically. Yeah. He doesn't know how to wake someone up gently. He doesn't probably even relate to the idea of sleeping in that way. So it's like, oh, well, I'll just shout in your ear and you'll wake up.
Yeah, exactly. And so then Paris wakes up, and then Janeway asks Paris what he remembers. And he tells her that when he achieved trans warp, he literally could see everyone everywhere. He was everywhere. He was everywhere in the Delta Quadrant. He was with the Kazon. He was with the Klingons. Mm-hmm. He was everywhere. Which, again, is such a cool thing. Like, could you imagine, like, being everywhere one time, having all of that information all at once in your brain? Like, it is like, is it a cool concept? And it just takes your imagination. It is very cool.
And he's even seems like that, where he's very euphoric about it. And
it's so very cool. And
of course, naturally you go to, now he has to turn into a lizard. I mean, you know, that's what's going to happen. As soon as this. I heard that that's what was going to happen in this episode, that he was going to go to warp 10, I was like, I hope they've got the lizard makeup ready. They're
ready for that. And then at the same time while he was doing that, he heard Voyager was worrying about him. So he took the transwarp engines offline, and that's when they saw him again. But he's already kind of losing the experience. Torres rushes into sickbay to check on him, and Janeway congratulates him for making it on the history books. And Paris is like, go check all the data in the logs, because wasn't just everywhere at the same time.
Yeah, the ship should have been
at the same time. So they have all this cool information about it, and he wants to go through the data, but the doctor tells him that he needs to run some more tests on him first. And it was so funny because, you know, what did the doctor say? He's like, it sounds like it was good for you.
It was nice for you. Yeah,
I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The doctor is especially doctory in this episode.
Also, the doctor doesn't like Tom Paris.
Yeah, that's true.
You can always tell that he does not like Tom Paris.
He gets him really good a little bit later. When we come to that part, I'll try to remember what he says. In engineering, we've got what we dubbed the superpower team, last episode?
Yeah,
two episodes ago. With Janeway joining Torres and Kim, and they're reviewing the logs that from the Cochrane, from the shuttle, and it's just an enormous amount of information that they've gathered, and it dawns on Janeway and Torres exactly what they've accomplished and exactly what they've acquired with all that information. And now the challenge is, like, we need to pinpoint one spot to come out of transwarp. How do we do that? But the thing is, Paris seems to have figured out how to end up where he needed to be, right? The Voyager was looking for him, so he came back to Voyager.
Well, the problem is that he came back in the same spot that he left. So, like, was he able to come back,
or turned the engines off? That makes sense. Okay, yeah. And then Janeway realizes, transwarp changes all of space exploration. Yeah. But unfortunately, it will not it's not long for this universe.
No, this is where the cool episode just plummets to the lowest of the depths. So we start in the mess hall, and Paris and Torres are reviewing the log, and Neelix is all kind of really gleeful, and he had named the coffee after
Paris. Yeah, he pours them a new blend, and he names it the Paris blend.
But the problem is Paris is like so distracted. At this point, he's probably like so distracted already. He's like going through some changes or whatever that he doesn't even hear. hear it. And then when he does, he's like, oh, well, thank you very much.
Like, yeah, like in this, that's where it kind of seemed like they could have done the Barkley thing, yeah, or the flower, I think they would have been better, thing, or whatever, yeah, the big brain, yeah, thing, because it's like he's beyond us now. He can't relate to us.
Yeah.
We're all the little people. I don't care about your coffee. Yeah. I don't even listening to you anymore, Neelix. But they don't go that way.
No, they don't. No. They went somewhere else. Terrible. So he drinks the coffee and he's like, oh, this tastes terrible. But Taurus thinks it tastes fine. And then all of a sudden he starts feeling queasy and she's like, you should go to the doctor. And he's like, I'm tired of going to the doctor. But then he's like, no, I need to go to the doctor. And then he collapses. And then Taurus is like trying to get him beamed to sick bay, but they can't get a lock on him because his pattern is changing.
Which is like, uh-oh.
And you're like, oh no. And so then they come to him. The medical team comes to the mess hall instead.
Yeah. And now they've gotten him to sick bay. And the doctor thinks it's an allergic reaction. And this is a pretty funny line, too, I thought. The doctor asked Torres, what did he ingest? And Torres says, just some of Neelix's coffee. Oh, and then the doctor says, it's a wonder he's still alive.
But it's like, the doctor doesn't even eat Neelix's food. Like,
what? But the doctor definitely, if the doctor doesn't like Paris, he definitely doesn't like Neelix either. Yeah. So, yeah. Then the doctor finds that Paris is allergic to the water in the coffee.
Which, dun, and dun, dun.
All of a sudden, Paris, he's laying there on the bed and he starts gasping.
Oh, but at this point, he's got weird veins all over his face.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
So he's going to start looking real bad.
He's definitely going to go through some physical changes. But yeah, right now, you're right. It's just veins. So it could be anything that might go away.
Yeah.
But then they find that his lungs are mutating,
yeah,
and they're no longer processing oxygen.
Right.
So the doctor has to think quick. He puts up an isolation field around Paris and then removes all the air and replaces it with, I believe, they said dioxychloride.
Yeah.
And Paris is able to breathe now, but the rest of the crew wouldn't be able to breathe what he's breathing. And so Paris, it seems like, okay, he's back, he's kind of getting stable again, but all of a sudden he shrieks, and he's in pain, and the doctor finds that his cellular membranes are deteriorating, and he's dying.
Yeah.
And the doctor sends Torres to go get more information about the shuttle test flight to see if that can help him diagnose Paris and hopefully treat him.
We're back at sick bay and Paris looks a mess and he's like going to die. And I will say this is the one part of his character that I think is consistent.
Throughout the episode?
Throughout all the episodes, like from the beginning. But it's also the one Paris character trait that I hate. Or the like.
He's like down on himself, basically?
No, that's fine. Because I've always known that. No, the weird like rambling about his past.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was like, he did that again when he was like, oh, you don't know who Doc Brown is? Like, no one knows who Doc Brown is. That's your role. Like, he does that. Like, especially with the doctor. And I'm always like, nobody cares about your stupid stories from when you were a little kid. Like,
I didn't even make that connection. But yeah, you're right. He definitely goes off on a tangent. Yeah.
About like his past. His nostalgia, whatever that is. I hate that aspect.
Because it's not even that interesting.
None of it's interesting.
I don't care where you're listening to this podcast at. Your childhood was probably a lot like Tom Paris's because it's just not that interesting.
Yeah.
But Tom Paris thinks it is.
He loves his childhood.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But it's always just the most mundane stories.
And you're like, that's not even an interesting story. Yeah. But he's sitting there and he's like, oh, I'm going to die. And then he's like, thinks about his funeral. And then this was like, oh, I hurt my little ship heart. Because he's like, everyone will cry. He's like, but I don't think Taurus will cry. She doesn't, because she doesn't cry. And he's like, he doesn't trust people who don't cry. Yeah. And I'm like, you don't trust Taurus? That's so sad.
And then he talks about all the time he spent crying as a child. And that's like, pretty much most of his memories was being in his room crying all the time.
Yeah, because.
Like, God dang.
Because his father. Well, first of all, his father thought crying was a weakness. But I really like that he doesn't believe in that, like, machismo. Like,
yeah,
he's not like about the machismo.
Right. Like, he
thinks like that crying is fine.
And when you're reared by somebody,
who has
you can
that
go
machismo.
Either way.
Yeah.
You either end up being like them, uh-huh, or you go against all of the stuff that they brought you up under.
Yeah.
And so he, because he resents his father, he resents anything that his father valued.
Yeah.
Which is good for him, yeah.
Which is nice. So, but so his father thought crying was a weakness, but he doesn't. He really likes crying. He really respects people who are able to cry. And then he talks about losing his, so yeah, he talks about all the time he cries in his room and how he loved his room.
And keep in mind, like, the doctor is barely responding. This is just Tom Paris'
monologuing
stream of consciousness.
Yeah, monologuing.
As he then goes on to describe in that room what happened.
Yeah, he lost his virginity in that room, and you're like, gross. Like, why? While his parents were away on some weekend, and the doctor's like, I'll make a note of that in your medical record, which was the only, that was so funny with the doctor.
That's the only thing the doctor, it's not like the doctor was ever interacting with him and like, why did you cry as a child? Yeah. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you, my dad think that, oh, why did your dad think that? No, he's just rambling. His rambling ended up, it was almost like a microcosm for the way the episode was written, where it was just like, what's next? What's the next thought that pops into your head? Like, oh, they turn into lizards. Okay. So what's the next thought that pops into his head? Well, I lost my virginity in the room.
Like,
okay.
Oh, God. Yeah. And so then he's like, so then he's taking a turn from the worst. Like, things are happening. He's clearly dying. But while he's doing that, he's like screaming how he's so hungry and he's craving pizza. And you're like, that's weird. But okay, that's fine. And then he asks Kes to kiss him, but she can't. So it's like, oh, I guess the Kes Paris stuff is still there.
There's like so many reasons why she can't. It's like she says, you'll suffocate if we let that isolation fill down. But also, like, I have a boyfriend, and also, like, you look like your face is about to explode, and we established that you're just my friend. But then that's where you can tell that Paris is also not in his right mind. Like, he is rambling, but he's also, it's because he's, like, afraid, and then maybe the whatever the experience was is already, like, doing something to his brain, too.
Yeah, so then he tells them to call his dad and tell his dad that Paris did it.
Yeah, he accomplished something or whatever. Yeah.
And then he just fades away and they can't revive him. And you're like, oh my God, Tom Paris, they killed Tom Paris?
I'm all right with it.
And then they deactivate the isolation field and then Kes kisses him on the cheek.
Yeah. Oh, but this was another part where it was just like, maybe we should do like a second draft of this script or something, because the doctor is just super cold. And says to Kes, as she's staring down at Tom's dead body, and, you know, they're friends at the very least, and he tells Kes, oh, you're going to need to get some rest. We're going to have to do an autopsy on him in the morning. Like maybe you should just do that autopsy yourself, doctor. Like,
yeah.
Kes doesn't need to be doing an autopsy on Tom Paris. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, that seemed just kind of cold. And no reason for it. No reason to even mention it in the episode. It didn't end up playing a part in the episode. So why would they show... We know the doctor's cold and aloof because he's a hologram. But that was just a very weird thing to, like... I felt uncomfortable for her. I felt bad for her. Yeah. And it didn't... And it served no purpose whatsoever. Yeah,
because she's not going to have to do it.
It's like you could go back through the episode, cut that line out. Nothing would happen. Mm-hmm. It'd be fine.
Yeah.
There's so many things in this episode that are like that. Which is why we literally could have summarized it in 5 sentences. But
So we're at the sick bay and the doctor's working on, and then he notices a sound. So he goes into where Paris is, and
Paris's dead body is just still laying on that bed.
Well, because they're gonna do the autopsy.
But they don't have like a cold storage or something.
And all of a sudden,
it's honestly the least of the problem that anyone would have with the episode. But yeah, he is just laying there with a sheet over him.
Paris is alive. He can breathe the air now, and like, which is again, I don't understand.
I don't understand. Nobody understands. No one said no.
Yeah, they didn't, because it's like, if you can't breathe oxygen, if you have evolved that you can't breathe oxygen, which again doesn't make any sense, because the whole point of us breathing oxygen is because the earth has oxygen. But why would you not be able to breathe oxygen as you evolve, unless like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, how is that an advantage to you evolution-wise? Yeah.
And then when he dies and he comes back, now he can breathe oxygen again?
The only thing I could think, but they don't explain it, and so I'm, you know, it's like, who's that interested in giving this episode that much, putting the effort in to give it credit, but it's like, maybe he was more like in a hibernation mode, as his body was adjusting, like, and then it was like, I'm going to die if I like, don't know how to breathe oxygen. But you already were breathing oxygen so before. Why did you need to switch?
Yeah, why did you switch? And why was, like, oxygen, like, literally you could not breathe it?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you die, and then now you can breathe it? Like, that makes no sense.
Maybe because that's the whole crux of this episode, is that, you know, he's evolving in the way that all humans will, but just at a rapid pace. But I don't see
why would you stop evolving? Why would our air
gets so bad that we are actually going to have to learn to breathe carbon monoxide directly out of car tailpipes.
But then
oxygen will be so foreign to us that it would be like, no, I don't understand. What is fresh air? It's so weird. I need to breathe poison.
But then millions of years later, you can start breathing oxygen again?
Like, we develop something that so the cars go away and fossil fuels go away, and then we have fresh air again. So then humans have to breathe fresh air again.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So,
I'm looking out for you, Voyager writing staff.
I say boo to that. So then all of a sudden, like, Paris, like, pulls out. I thought it was the ear at first. It would have been cooler.
No, it wouldn't have. Because I thought it was the ear too, and I looked away. And then the second time, I thought it was the ear, but I needed to write it down for the notes. And then, luckily it was just the hair. Yeah. I was convinced it was the ear. It was the ear that just pulled it right off.
And then all of a sudden, all of Paris's organs are working just fine, but now Paris has two hearts.
Two hearts. Yeah. One for Kes and one for Torres. And then we're in, like, a dark room. I guess it was the traitor's quarters or something, but he's on his little laptop and he's communicating with his Kazon contact. And I know the Kazon contact is named Reddick.
Yeah.
And he was Seska's receptionist from the last episode, too. So the traitor is talking to Seska's receptionist, and he wants to send over the information about Transwarp, and he thinks it should prove his worth to Seska so that he can get in with the Kazon Nistrum and get off of Voyager.
Well, he sends all of the data that they collected to them, which is, ugh.
And then Reddick says, we'll see.
So we're in the sick bay as the doctor and Janeway, and so she's trying to find out what's happening, and he says that Paris is Paris, but he's changing rapidly into something else. And so he's fairly lucid and recognizes people, but at the same time, all of a sudden he's got, like, deranged behavior, and it's just really bad. And this was hard for me to watch.
I'm sure this was hard for the actor who plays Tom Paris.
I feel so bad for him.
And well, that's one thing, like, to clarify, like, I personally don't like the Paris character, but the Paris actor, I think, is actually pretty strong.
He was giving it his all, and I wouldn't have given it my all, but he did. It was hard to watch because he never broke character. He wasn't bad at it. There's not a single line where you're like, woof, you know? He acted the shit out of it, but it was just so bad.
The actor who plays Tom Paris throughout the whole series, I've never had a bad experience with him.
No, like, no. He's always been able to take what he gets. I think I've even said it before,
I feel like he could carry his own show. Yeah. And this was back in, like, mid-90s UPN, where, he might have got a chance at his own show. Not a Star Trek show, but he could have been Marker or whatever. That was a show that was on UPN at the time. But I think it was Richard Grieco? Was that the guy's name? 21 Jump Street.
Oh, no, I have no idea.
He was like a mercenary type guy. Yeah. Tom Paris. Anyway, he could have had a show like that. One of these cheeseball action shows. Like, I think he's that strong enough of an actor, you know?
He could carry.
But this is asking a lot of anybody.
Yeah.
No one could have done this well, I don't think. Including Kate Mulgrew, I don't think.
No, because Kate Mulgrew, she does botch lines. Like, she delivers the shit out of lines.
But when they give her a bad line, it sounds bad.
It sounds bad.
Yeah.
Like, none of Paris's, like, it was all bad. The dialogue was bad. But none of it was him bad acting.
No.
He sold every single line.
I was like, what are you supposed to do when you're a man being turned into a lizard for no good reason?
Yeah.
And losing your mind at the same time.
Yeah, and it had this whole scene. Has like strains of The Fly,
mm-hmm.
so like, but at least there, like, like he was merging into a fly. It was a horrible scientific accident. The fly was like much better thought out than this is, but like the way he's transforming is very much the
fly. And Jeff Goldblum, honestly, is probably a better actor than anyone on Voyager, too.
Correct. That is also correct. So Paris looks terrible. He looks so much more deformed now. His eyes all cloudy. And again, you're like, I don't know how was there ever a spot in the evolution supposedly that like people looked like that?
Right. At this point, he kind of looks like Uncle Fester.
He's got like weird lesions all over his face.
If you had an Uncle Fester action figure and like melted it, that's what it looks like.
And like his
he's very pale. He has no hair.
Is pulsing.
Yeah, there's a part of it, which is cool. Props to the prop department or whatever, that he's got a pulsing, lesion on the side of his face kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, his whole side of his face is, like, pulsing.
Yeah.
But, like you say, why would that ever
be? Evolutionary.
I can't wait for that to happen.
Yeah, why would that be evolutionarily advantage? Like, the whole point of evolution is that you do things... our bodies do things, and like the genes that come out stronger are supposed to be like help with survival, like support survival of humanity, you know?
And that's where like they could have explored that idea of someone evolving rapidly. Now, I don't think we would agree, and from reading Memory Alpha, I don't think a lot of fans agreed that there's much indication that humans would evolve into this particular form of a lizard, but you could explore that. And what would be if the effects of that when you're evolving so rapidly despite your surroundings, when evolution is all about adapting to your surroundings,
correct?
And so they could have explored that, but instead it's just they're doing like a body horror thing, like you say, the fly. And turning him into a monster, and there's no sense to it. Again, I was talking about before, the things happen and they don't explain it.
There's nothing evolutionarily advantage to anything that he's going through. Why would it be better for you to have a cloudy eye that you can't see out of?
Well, just one of them.
Just one of them. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
I can see, like, we have hair for a reason. Like, hair helps protect from bacteria and germs and things that could get to us. Everything has a purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, anyways, none of this looks like it has a reason for it. Janeway tells him that they're going to make him better, and he's like good with it for a minute. And then all of a sudden he turns now he's physically a monster. Now he turns like emotionally into a monster. And he tells him that, why are they going to make him better? This is what he wants. He wants to look like this. He's evolving. He didn't say he was evolving. He said that he's becoming better. And you're like, I don't see how this could make you better. He'll probably kill you. I don't know.
He said something about, like, you never wanted me in, I was a disgrace anyway to you the way I was.
Yeah, and then all of his issues come out. He is nothing but a Maquis traitor. Everyone's lying to him, telling him that he's doing a good job. No one thinks he's doing a good job. Like, he's not respected on the ship. Like, all of his little issues come out. And that, everyone's jealous that he broke the transwarp barrier, and now they hope that he dies. And Janeway at some point is like, I'm not going to put up with this. She's like, you're right, I can't help you. And she goes and walks away, but then Paris gets all sad. He's like, no, I'm just scared. Don't leave me. I'm scared. I don't know what is happening. And all of this stuff. But then all of a sudden he's like, I know you're trying to help me. He's like, but I know you'll fail. And he goes and attacks her. And it's like, how is emotionally being unstable, like evolutionarily gives you an evolution advantage.
Well, and again, we can infer, but they're asking a lot of the audience with this stuff. Like, we can infer that his body is being like torn several different directions, and his mind is as well, as he's trying to cope with the rapid evolution. But they don't ever say that. Yeah. Eventually, they're just like, this is what humans will become. They don't say like he's struggling with the transformation. Or anything like that. We don't know. Like, why, what, like you say, if it's all based on evolution, what part of the evolution, it's not just that he's struggling emotionally, but that all of his issues are coming out. All of his different foibles and things are all coming out. And yeah, are they trying to say, which I don't think, I think we're putting more thought into it than they did, the writers, but it's like, are you trying to say that at some point we will only be our issues? We'll just lash out about everything that currently is like subconsciously eating away at us?
Yeah.
And how is that good for evolution?
It's not. Yeah. Yeah. So then he lunges towards her, like to attack her, but luckily there's a force field around the area. And it's nice for Janeway because she doesn't even flinch. She's like,
yeah, I wish she knew there was a force field.
And then he begins to tell her that he used to look up to her, but now he's looking at her, she's so small and insignificant and everyone is. But before he can really get any more of his stuff out,
he starts to go on like he's going to do like his big rant.
And then all of a sudden he can't instead, talk anymore and he pulls out his tongue. And again, it's like, at what point, why would not speaking and why would not having a tongue be evolutionarily, give you an evolutionary advantage? Like, that makes no sense.
And that's totally, and now that you mention it, you mentioned the fly thing, and I remember now in reading the Memory Alpha that the one writer, the Brandon Braga, said, like, I don't know if he was doing it consciously or just looked at back at it later and said, like, this was my homage to the fly, and you could see that, like, he pulls his tongue out in the way that the fly was like ripping off his fingernails and things. But
the difference, what was that point? The difference was that, like, he was accidentally turning into a fly, a
lower species, so to speak,
not evolving into a higher species.
Yeah, so you can't have it both ways,
right?
You can't, but yeah, so now Paris has no tongue, which you would think would be great for the actor because he's not gonna have to act and talk anymore, but no. He's immediately talking in the very next scene.
Yeah.
We're still in sick bay, and Kes is telling the doctor that the genetic mutation is accelerated. And the doctor, the one good thing is the doctor, he's got something in mind. This isn't like a problem that he's not going to necessarily be able to solve. And he's already got a treatment he wants to try. But then Paris interrupts him. And we see Paris over in his little corner. He's on the floor. He's rocking in place. And again, he's got no tongue, but it's like he's got half a tongue.
Yeah,
because like if you don't have a tongue, you wouldn't be able to articulate any of the things that he's doing. And I feel so bad for the actor because he's got to do this thing where he's like,
he like sells it. Like, I would not, I cannot be an actor anyways, but I could not do this. Yeah.
I would look at this script. What did I do to upset you?
I know. I'm like, can you please change this? I don't want to do this. Like, I can't do this. But he goes all in, and you have to give him props for that. Because he's sitting there, and he's talking like that, and he's
rocking back and forth. Right. There's no good way to do it. There's no good way to... Even if the lines were brilliant...
No, yeah.
But you're reading Shakespeare, you have to go, like, pretend like you have a half a tongue.
Yeah.
And, like... And I was just thinking, like, half the things he's saying, you wouldn't be able to say with... Yeah.
Without half a tongue. Right.
But.
Yeah.
There's also a part of me that thinks that, like, because there's like, Neelix. Who on this show has to do heavy makeup all the time? Neelix, obviously the most. Torres, probably the next most. But I think that, like, they always want to give someone a turn in the heavy makeup chair.
Just to torture them?
Kind of, yeah. Make them feel it. And this was Tom Paris' turn.
I know, poor him.
Because Chakotay had to be a Vidian one time.
Yeah, that's true.
Torres had to be a full Klingon one time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that they'll. So I think there's part of that too. But normally they don't have to act like this. So anyway, he starts rambling, and it kind of reminded me of like when you're sober around drunk people. Like, that's what the doctor's thing was. Like, what now, Tom?
He's like, no patience for it.
And the drunk guys they're high or whatever, and they're pontificating all this brilliant stuff or whatever, or they're bleeding emotionally all over you, and you're like, God, this is like
the worst.
Especially when the doctor's probably thinking, like, you're gonna be dead soon, like, just shut up. But basically, he just rambles. He says something like, I am more, I am everything. So, again, they got a little bit at that idea that he's transcended evolving humanity, but
physically,
he's not transcending humanity. There's no one could argue that.
No.
And so the worse he gets, also, the doctor, like, realizes that they need to hurry up and get this problem solved.
Yeah.
And
But also, like, there's no sign that he's actually evolving a higher capacity either.
He just
it doesn't seem real.
Yeah, I mean, there's people with actual, you know, now with, like, mental health issues that have like delusions of grandeur. That's a common symptom. So for all we know, it's just that.
Yes. They're in the conference room and they're trying to figure this out. And Doctor reports to Janeway, Chakotay, Torres, and he's going to force all of the Paris' DNA to revert to its original coding. They could destroy all the mutant DNA, causing his old DNA to have to return. Because if they can get rid of all of his new DNA, then his old DNA will kickstart his old DNA into coming back. But they have to do it with anti-proton radiation. There's only one place that has anti-protons. That's the warp core. The doctor says that they're going to have to restrain Paris and zap him with the anti-proton burst. And Torres says it will take 3 hours, but the doctor's like, 3 hours, there's not going to be anything left of him. So they're going to have to do it within the hour.
Which we know Torres doesn't like that shit. No. Don't tell Torres to do something quicker than it actually can be done. She don't play that game. But yeah. I guess she's going to play that game this episode.
Yeah.
And there she is in engineering. They're getting everything ready. Now Paris is
a slimy
full-on, slimy lizard-looking kind of a thing.
So you can
or
see
you
him
said
him
like a fish kind of, too. Yeah. You got like a fish face. Lizard, kind of a lizard, kind of a fish.
Yeah. Which again, like, I guess this is my mammal bias, but I just don't think that, like, you are devolving if you are turning into a lizard, like a reptile, a cold-blooded animal.
Right. Are they known to be? I literally don't know, but I don't know. Are reptiles known to be intelligent?
No.
Okay.
No.
Pigs are intelligent.
What
if you turn into a pig? That
pigs
would be
are
awesome.
So pigs are intelligent. Cows are intelligent. Dolphins are intelligent. Those are animals that are known for being intelligent. And they are all mammals.
They should have had him turn into a pig. And then Torres would say, Tom, I always knew you were a pig. Didn't she call him a, she called him a pig in an episode already,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was the, that was the cloud.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be foreshadowing.
Yeah.
UPN, you missed. You missed your chance with it. So Torres tells the doctor everything's ready, but she's going to have to take the warp engines offline and in order to do the treatment. They start the treatment, but Paris starts to break out of the... It's like the bio bed, so he's got like this actual physical restraint over his like torso. And he breaks out of the bio bed. In sickbay, Kes says the treatment isn't working. The mutated DNA is deteriorating, but the old DNA isn't taking over the way the doctor thought it would. Yeah. And the doctor's confused, but before they can really get to the bottom of it, Paris is broken free. And this is a not straightforward way to present this information, which I guess I appreciated in a way. We're seeing it from the doctor's point of view. The doctor's still stuck in sickbay for these episodes. They never got around to doing his projector, holographic projectors. Maybe so. So he's got to view everything in that's happening in engineering over a view screen. And all we, when Paris breaks free, we only hear the commotion. And then you hear like a phaser fight. And then you start to see phaser blasts into the view screen that the doctor's looking at. And then it's really cool because then a phaser blast hits the view screen itself and knocks it out. So now they don't know what's going on. But then Tuvok knows that there's like a security alert and he announces it to the ship that everyone needs to get to their stations. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was interesting and I don't know if it was just, you know, it's a more suspenseful way to show that or it's just kind of different.
Yeah.
But I also don't know if, like, did they do that for a reason? Because, like, maybe the makeup that Paris has on is too cumbersome to allow him to be
actually fighting and kicking
and hitting and stuff.
I think that's what it is.
But it's like, if that's the case, I kind of respect it more. It's like you take your limitations and you turn it into a strength, you know?
Yes.
So, anyway, so now Paris is running loose.
Yeah. Oh, also, I want to say, like, obviously, like, anything, like, the gorilla, chimpanzee, those animals are also intelligent. Also mammals.
Oh, yeah. We watched Rise of the Planet of the Apes the other night, and it turns out chimpanzees can talk if you just teach them well enough.
No, that's not true.
They can say four words.
You have to give them, like, special, like...
Alzheimer's medicine. Yeah. But I thought that they didn't have the physical... I didn't think they had the parts in their body to make speech, but it turns out you just need Alzheimer's medicine. James Franco makes, so...
So we're in the corridor, and Janeway is updated that Paris broke free and from Chakotay on the bridge, and they can't find him, but they're searching deck by deck. Janeway is going to go into the turbo lift, but she senses or hears something behind her. She turns around, and she has her phaser, but Lizard Paris is too fast for her. He jumps her.
He's such an advanced species.
Knocks her out.
He's such an advanced species. He's able to sneak up on Janeway, of all people. Yeah. So we were wrong. He is an advanced species now. On the bridge, Kim has detected that phaser fire that Janeway let off. And so Chakotay sends Tuvok's security team to that location. But it's too late because
Lizard Paris has finally made it into the shuttlecraft. And for some reason, and this is where, again, you don't explain it.
Why
did he take Janeway with him? He only took Janeway with him so that they could have lizard sex later. I don't know why he took her.
I didn't even think about
it. Like, because
at this point, I was just
like
what the hell is even happening in this episode?
I would have accepted
anything that happened. I would have accepted if it turned into a musical. I would have accepted if they got home and then just said, fuck it. Like, fuck
we're
this
dead.
Show.
Yeah, we're dead.
But yeah, so I was like, oh, he's stealing Janeway now.
Like,
this is just a fever dream at this point, so it doesn't really matter. But that's a good explanation. He needs to reproduce. It's just like an animal instinct.
Yeah, because like she slows him down. He has to lunge her unconscious body onto the shuttlecraft. Like, she could wake up and attack him. Like, why are you taking this person with you? He knows what he's doing. He's going to the shuttlecraft. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But anyways, it doesn't matter. That's what he brings Janeway onto the shuttlecraft, and so now he's going to like fly off.
Yeah, and back on the bridge, Kim says someone's leaving the shuttle bay. And I guess they've taken the tractor beam offline before they left, which Paris did, because that's Chakotay's first thought, of course. Well, we'll just tractor beam them in, but they can't.
Yeah.
And Tuvok says they found Janeway's phaser, but no Janeway. So we see the shuttle leave, and so Voyager's going to follow the shuttle, but it can't keep up with the Cochrane without tearing itself apart, and it immediately... The computer starts warning Chakotay that his structural integrity is compromised. So they have to slow down and let Paris's ship get away as it goes to transwarp.
Yeah. And this is where you feel bad for Janeway, because she's going to have to go through the evolution, or I would say the devolving of that Paris did. But she doesn't have a doctor. She doesn't have anyone. She's there by herself.
And Kate Mulgrew must have put her foot down, though, because that all happens off screen.
Yeah, you don't see
it. Like,
single
I ain't
bit
doing
of
that shit.
I'm not doing any
I ain't
of
talking
it.
With no tongue. I ain't ripping my hair out. No, no, no. I draw the line.
Yes. So Chakotay is now doing his first officer log, and he's like, well, we located the shuttle after 3 days. It finally came out of transwarp onto like this a desolate planet,
kind of a jungle planet. It looked like.
And the doctor, this is where I get offended, because the doctor...
This is where?
Because this is where it all comes together. So the doctor, they're in sick bay, Chakotay's with the doctor in sick bay, and he said that the reason the treatment had failed is because Paris's transformation is natural. It is what the human genome will evolve into... eventually. And at that point, I go through like existential dread. Like, what is the point of humanity if this is what we evolve into? Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's like horrific. Like, that is the most offensive thing that you could say, is that this was all natural. In 4 million years, people are going to go through that kind of evolution to the point where like eventually they turn into lizards.
Because
it is to me, it's just so offensive. It's
the only
and also to me, it's like, well, what is the point of humanity? At this point, just give up. Like, I'm done. I'm going to get chili. I'm going to get some peeps. I'm going to eat chili peeps for the rest of my life. Like, there is no point to anything. You know, like.
Yeah. Well, in the Memory Alpha, one of the people associated with the show talked about maybe these lizards experience consciousness on a level that we can't even understand. And so, but again, there's no indication of that.
No,
it just looks like a big, it looks like a Gila monster that exists now, basically. I mean, they didn't use that. It looked like a CGI type thing, maybe, or maybe a real prop that they designed. But either way, there's no indication that it's expanded its consciousness at all.
No.
I mean,
no.
It doesn't. And maybe we're looking at it from like a narrow point of view, But it would be nice to have that all enveloped into the episode of the idea, like, is civilization a sign of evolution? Like,
right.
is a utopia, the way that we think of utopia, the sign of evolution? Because these lizards live in the jungle next to a lake and just sit around and have babies all day.
But that is so boring.
They can't talk, they can't communicate, but they can't do anything with their hands. Yeah, they're not. Maybe they don't need to. I don't know why I'm playing devil's advocate with this episode.
No, it's so terrible. No, but
maybe the idea is like we all just need to go back to nature, and that's the true.
No, because here's the thing is like appendages are so important. So like, if you are having this like high evolutionary thought process, you're going to want to create something with that. What's the point of sitting there thinking?
Well, especially because as we'll see. When Chakotay and Tuvok show up and just blast these lizards
they
with a phaser, and
they can't protect themselves.
Not even close.
Like, they couldn't even run away and get shot with a phaser. Yeah, like completely. Like, there's no evolutionary advantage.
Yeah, and survival, like as violent as it is and always has been, like, survival is still an aspect of existence, human existence, or any organism's existence.
So why are you going to lose the ability to walk upright and have appendages that can actually touch and move and like move things?
We talked about that a little bit too earlier today. Where
opposable thumbs are incredibly important.
Well, you said four legs. You don't respect the idea of four legs being advancement in.
No.
But then you talked about how dolphins are actually really smart.
Yeah.
And they have no arms or legs.
Yeah.
So. Maybe the goal is to lose all your limbs. So we're like right in the middle right now. We can walk on 2 feet.
Yeah.
The idea is to not walk at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, ugh. And so the problem with Paris was that he evolved within one day and he evolved due to the transwarp trip. So the transwarp pushes them into this extreme evolution. So now he knows what to do. He just has to intensify the treatment. And then Kim says that they located the exact location of the shuttlecraft near the planet's equator. So these higher evolutionary animals didn't even like know enough to get away from the shuttlecraft. They just like crawled out of the shuttlecraft and like sat there.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I'm just picturing
and
people
I don't
like,
even know, and I don't even know how they turned off the shuttlecraft out of transwarp because they don't have
How did they even open the door?
How did they open the door? How did they do any of it?
Well, maybe they took this form like just 15 minutes before we even saw them.
Enough to have babies.
Babies, yeah. Yeah. Well, there's so much. Again, it's almost, I don't know. I can't imagine like. I like to write things. I don't know. I don't think anyone will ever read it, but I'm just trying to put myself in that headspace of like, oh, I'll just skip all that. Mm-hmm. Like, I just need to get to the part where they're lizards having babies next to the lake. Like, why did you need to get there for one thing? Yeah. But like, why did you think it was okay to not show the audience anything that led up to that either?
Yeah.
And just go there because this is not a satisfying ending.
Dehumanizing, like, could you imagine? Like, I don't know. Like,
well, then I'm trying to imagine being the person who was tasked with creating these interesting little lizard things, and I honestly don't know if they're computerized or real. Real little like
puppets,
mechanical puppet things, but
or
like,
if they're people inside of lizard costumes.
If it's actually Kate Mulgrew and the other guy, Robert Duncan McNeil,
they would never do that.
Get in the lizard suit now.
Crawl around.
It's like a sleeping bag to them.
Yeah.
Just like rolled up in a little lizard sleeping bag, just sitting there making, you know, six figures or whatever.
Kid Lord.
But obviously somebody had to sit there and design that, and they like. For what, you know?
Right.
Like, why? Why are we doing this? This is so stupid.
Yeah.
At this point in the episode, I mean, like, we're shitting on it hard, but it's so stupid
it's so bad at this point in the episode. Yeah.
Well, where are we at? They shot him. Yeah.
Well, it's so funny because Tuvok and Chakotay are there. They're like, they don't know which one's the female or the male. And
they got a good line in there at least.
And then they do see the baby lizards.
Baby lizards just leave. So the get up and run leave, into the water.
And then they're both looking at each other, and Tuna's like, I don't know how I'm going to put this in my log. Tuvok's like, he's like, I want to read it.
Yeah.
Like, but also, I have no respect. Like, okay, you think about, like, gestation, and you think about, like, complex, beings, and like how long it takes to gestate like a complex being,
right?
Like, I mean, like elephants, I think take like 2.5 years or something.
Like a fly would take like, I don't even know how long, but probably not more than like a day or two.
Yeah, a day or two. Yeah. And then humans are like 9 months. And it's like, so it's all kind of, but most
you can kind of tell based on the complexity of the organism,
right?
It should take more time. Yeah.
And so 3 days, 3 days to have like 6 babies.
But maybe they've knocked it out. You know, maybe they're so evolved that they're like, this gestation period thing is just taking too long.
I don't know.
I mean, yeah, ultimate goal for like a pregnant person is to at least like get, once labor begins, get it out as quickly as possible. Maybe 30 minutes or so.
the dream.
Yeah. Yes. And so, but you don't want to shorten that 9 month period.
Yeah. So then they just zap them because like they're completely helpless and they just get phasered. Like, knocked out.
I don't even know why they did either. At this point, it's like, just you can put a little leash on them and just walk them back into the shuttle.
Yeah, ridiculous. Yeah.
But yeah, that was the other thing. Chakotay says, I don't know which one is the captain, which I thought it was telling that he only cared about which one was Janeway.
Yeah, he cares about Paris.
I don't care about Lizard Paris. Fuck him. But he's like, I don't know which one's the captain. And Tuvok says, the female, obviously.
But, like, yeah.
Is it obvious? Maybe we become a species that can change.
Again,
Like, who knows? Ones.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. Mm. So we're in sick bay, and then Chakotay Log just said he decided to leave the Paris Janeway children in their original habitat. Like, what?
I don't know how many they are. You have to go fishing for them. No,
it's like not worth it. You're like, whatever. We'll just leave these random, like, higher level humans, like, in this random pond. Like, what? Like,
okay. Well, I think it just guarantees that the Paris legacy of resenting your parents will remain intact. Because these poor little lizard fish babies, like, we have no parents.
Yeah, like,
my dad left me when I was a tadpole.
Ridiculous. So then we're in the sick bay, and the doctor has returned Janeway back to normal, but he wants her to remain in sick bay for a few days just to be safe because she needs to, like, I don't know, keep her DNA intact.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
she's back from a lizard. You might want to take a few days off.
Yeah. And then she's like, oh, I'm done with you, the doctor. I'm going to go over there and talk to Tom Paris.
My baby daddy.
She's like, I'm out of here. And then Jay walks over to Paris and discusses having children with him. And then she's like really playful about like, she does not give, like, this would be the most traumatizing experience, like, for anybody. Like, but she has like no gravity about it. She just like jokes about it with him.
I just interpreted it as like disassociation. She's like, she can't even be in that headspace. She can't even put herself in that experience at all. So yeah, it's all a joke.
It's all fine.
It's all a joke. Like, it's not even like gallows humor. It's just like,
she was like,
I can't believe that this happened.
She was like, I always thought maybe I'd be a mom. I just didn't think I'd be one like this.
And yeah,
like,
or with
what?
You.
With you? Yeah. What? Like, yeah. No, too soon to be making jokes. You just abandoned your lizard children on a planet. Like, what?
Yeah, she has no, he or her don't have any like paternal instincts to protect these babies.
Yeah,
they're like,
no.
Fuck those lizard babies.
We do not care.
I'm pretending like this never happened.
Yeah, he's all embarrassed and he doesn't remember getting it on with her and he's just very sorry.
Yeah,
she's like, why are you sorry? I'm the one that like made this happen. And you're like, what?
Yeah, it's almost like, I feel like this part of the episode was written by whoever didn't write the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
This they said, you know what? I don't know. We don't have time to fix this. We put so much effort into the salamander sleeping bags that Kate Mulgrew and Robert Duncan Minow crawled into. But we need like the little coda that shows that this was so fucking ridiculous. And you're not writing, Brandon Braga or Michael DeLuca, you're not writing it. Someone else came in and wrote it. And they were like, we have to show that we know this was ridiculous too.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we'll get canceled tomorrow.
Yeah, I think this
UPN will be like, what the hell happened to this show.
It's like terrible. And so then she's like, okay, so now I'm done talking about the babies. We're over that. So then she's like, wants to tell him that she's going to put a commendation for him in about his trans warp flight.
I said it was because the sex was so good.
I know. Yeah. God. And then he thanks her and she's like, oh, what, are you okay? And he's like, I'm a bit overwhelmed. And I'd be like, I would be having the most existential angst you could ever imagine. Like, this is what humanity is turning into. Like, what on earth? Like, I turned into like this horrible lizard creature. I fucked my boss. Like, we had babies. We left the babies on the planet. And now I'm here. Like, I don't think I could ever recover. It would take me years to recover. No. Years of trauma, hard therapy.
Humiliation.
Like, horrifying.
Even
all his emotional spewing out to everyone. Everyone,
the doctor, Kes, come kiss me.
All of it. Like, I'm embarrassed for accidentally fucking my boss when we were in lizard form. But I'm also embarrassed because, like, I was in this crazy experience. Like, all of it. Like,
I mean, that's relatable to people now who get anesthesia or something and they come out and they're a little bit ridiculous. But even those people, I say those people, which is probably like most people in the world have ever had surgeries. I haven't. But people do that and then they're embarrassed about the stories later, you know?
Yes.
Like, Paris would at least have that level of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of it. Yeah. And so, and then he's like, really, he is proud of himself for breaking the trans warp barrier. He's like, but now that he really thinks about it, it is kind of like an empty accomplishment. He was trying to like use it to fill a hole. But it's like, and I would be like, oh, I could take that, except the fact that like you turned into a lizard and fucked your boss. Yeah, it would be empty. Like, that, like, what would, like, you went to trans warp and then this happened, but this happening overrides that.
While also simultaneously revealing that humanity is a dead-end species.
And where's no point? Like, what's the point of all of your accomplishments when at the end of the day, you're just going to end up these terrible lizard creatures that are completely
This is why
helpless.
We're doing it. We're exploring the whole universe so that we can all revert back to lizards creatures. And go live in the jungle.
Yeah, like that alone. Like that alone, I would just be like, all right, I give up. Like, humanity, there's no point. What's the point?
And that also would be a good Star Trek episode. Yeah. Where the first 20 minutes, Paris sees that, or they all see it somehow. Yeah. And like, that's the data that comes back. And they're like, what does this mean for humanity? Do we continue to strive? What is the objective view of advancement and progress?
Like, what does that mean?
That's all interesting to me.
Yeah.
And then make a good Star Trek show. This is weird shit that one thing didn't connect to the next thing, and it all led up to what we're talking about now.
Yeah. And he's not sure what has changed with him. And then she said that, like, he really has earned a lot of people's respect. Like, because it goes back to, like, all of his issues. And, like, this is the empty because, like, it didn't accomplish what he thought or what he wanted, which is respect from other people. But it's not the respect from other people he needs. He needs to find, like, self-respect.
And I'm like, that's out the window.
How can you find self-respect when you turn into a lizard to fuck your boss? Like, I mean, both of you were lizard forms. Like, yes. I was like, okay.
That's out there forever.
All we need is self-respect.
Everyone knows that.
Nobody in this show got self-respect.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this episode.
It's like if he pissed his pants in the mess hall, only like 8 billion times worse than that. Like, everyone you ever see for the next 70 years is going to be like, that's the guy that turned into a fucking lizard and had sex with Janeway.
Yeah. And so, Janeway ends it with like, oh yeah, I think you can like have self-respect at the end of this. It's like, I don't know how. Yeah. You don't have a counselor on that ship.
go make this into an episode. Get out of here. We'd be done with it.
We're done. Yeah.
Janeway says some nice thing at the end. Let's go.
Move on. That's it. Yeah.
So what did you think of this episode?
Clearly I didn't like it. I did not like it. It was offensive on every level. It's an existential nightmare. Like, again, I feel so bad for the poor Tom Paris, and because like we haven't seen an episode with Tom Paris. And so this is like his first episode in like since again, like I think the sixth episode or something. And this is what he has to do. But again, I have full respect for the actor because he he, again, not a single line was like, I mean, all of it was bad, but like his acting was not bad.
Yeah.
So like kudos to him, because it could have, like, in somebody else's hand, someone who wasn't as good a skilled of an actor, like it would have been just like, you know.
Oh, unairable.
Yeah. Unairable. Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, again, I liked the very beginning before he starts turning, all of that was good. It was good, like, you know, character development, good, like, little, like, get, like, I liked all of those scenes up until, like, the fourth scene, and after that, it was just like, ugh.
It's all, it wasn't even downhill, it just fell off a cliff. Yeah. But also, like, caught fire on the way down before, like, smashing into a million pieces at the bottom of the cliff.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, feel bad for Tom Paris. Feel bad for Tom Paris. And I feel bad for the actor of Tom Paris. Again, like, they're making him more intelligent. He's able to, like, go with the group now. So, they maybe they can put him in more things and he can do a lot more than just be the pilot. So, that might be good. But other than this, like, I mean, horrific. Wow. So I'm going to have to...
You pulled out a microscope to find the silver lining.
Yeah. This episode. Like, I'm going to have to go... I'm going to have to actually give this, like, a 68%. Like, a D plus.
Wow. That has got to be the lowest grade.
Yeah. And I think I do it because I am offended on behalf of humanity. Also, like, it makes me upset because, like, yeah, they went the fly route, but then they try to turn it around and be like, this is what humans are evolving into. It's like, you can't have it both ways. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Man, I didn't even think about the grade, honestly. Yeah, like you said, well, and I even read too, like, that the Star Trek staff felt like they hadn't given Paris anything to do in a while, and they were underutilizing him. But if I was the actor who played Tom Paris, I'd just be like, no. Do me a favor. Don't do me no favors. I'll just be the pilot. Yeah.
I might be the side character.
Yeah. Yeah. I've said everything that needs to be said. I'm sure everyone ever has. But grade-wise, I still don't want, like, there's the part of it, like, I never want to give it, like, such a bad grade, because it at the end of the day, it always comes back to that respect for me, you know?
Yeah.
And even, and also, so the Brandon Braga guy, like, he, like I said at the beginning of this, he admits this was a stinker of an episode.
Yeah, so he even knows it was bad.
And, but he's written, as he said, hundreds of Star Trek episodes, and, like, you're gonna get, it's like... I don't know. I mean, if we're giving grades and then, you know, obligatory teacher reference here that we're both teachers, if I had a student who generally did A and B work and then just turned in some crazy thing, I certainly wouldn't demean them too badly, or I wouldn't send them home with a D plus, or I would be like, you can make corrections. But they can't make corrections off of this.
What I would say is,
if you bomb the test.
What I do is, like, you get the test, you get it taken out. Like, especially if you just don't include it. Like, especially if I have 9 kids out of 25 kids who bomb a test. Guess what? I don't count the test, and I reteach, and then I...
But that's what we don't really have that luxury. It's just like, this is what you turned in. This is almost like you're grading something from another class.
Yeah.
And, you know? And then, like... that someone already accepted this, like, this work. Like, this but there's also the aspect of it that it's like so bad it's good, and there's some the scene that we talked about where Neelix was trying to like keep track of what they were even doing. Yeah, it was genuinely funny.
Yeah. Again, but, the first. Scenes were good.
I'd be okay with almost all of it if it wasn't for that section of Paris acting deranged in the sick bay.
That was terrible. Like, was hard to watch.
That makes it so hard. It makes me wish I was doing percentages, because I want to give it a C minus, but the lowest, like a 70% C minus. But I feel like... I'm going C minus.
C minus? I don't think you can give
because
it
there's also, as, and everyone's probably seen these, like, examples, even if you're not a teacher, where a student gives an answer that's so wrong, but it's also amusing. Which I guess is, like, the so bad it's good kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, as the teacher, you're like, all right, like, that's just funny. Like, I respect that, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, that's, like, almost where this is. Like, again, I'll never give an F because an F would be, like, it would have to be, I mean, I guess it could if it was just, like, out and out, like, totally racist or something, you know?
Yeah.
D plus, though, is, like, the one where it's just, like, ah, see, that's where it's hard. I think I said before, like, it's, like, but you barely, like, you made an episode.
I think you deserve...
And that's what this was.
If you deserve a D, you deserve a D.
Ah. Okay, never mind. Yeah, I'm going D plus because there's just so many things in there that we were just supposed to accept. And that was bonkers, but it wasn't bonkers in a good way.
No.
And then somehow we're, at the end of the day, we're supposed to feel like Tom Paris grew as somebody, and it's like, huh?
No. And also, you can't, like, end it with, like, I just need self-respect.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, this whole that episode ship has needed sailed. Self-respect.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I guess a couple of D pluses.
Yeah.
All
too bad. Right. So sad. Right.
Yeah. Wow.
Tell us what you think about this episode using the hashtag DisplacedInSpace on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @DisplacedCast. You can also find us on Instagram and on Facebook at DisplacedInSpacePodcast. And you can email us at DisplacedInSpacePodcast@gmail.com. All of this and more can be found on our website, DisplacedInSpace.com.
And if you'd like to make this podcast better and stronger, the site also has links to Venmo and PayPal. And finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, be sure to subscribe, leave a review wherever you're listening, and tell a friend. Until next time,
podcast out.